found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's, let's check the head.
In my gravity boots, I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows. Better than a man being blown.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me today are none of my regular co-hosts. We today have special guest Jeff Hewlett with me, who is the Commander-in-Chief of the Tricorder Transmissions.
How's it going, David? Nice to be here.
Thank you for joining me, man.
My pleasure, man. This has been great. I've been having a lot of fun talking to you over Messenger for the last week or so.
Yeah, the last week.
Getting to know you a bit better.
Yeah, Bonnie Moss tweeted, you and Bonnie were tweeting before I recorded with her last week.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that was pretty cool.
And so I kind of was like, oh, hey, you do a podcast. We should make things work.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. We've had Larry on the show, on the Tricorder Transmissions before, and, Bonnie is a listener of Shore Leave. She's a fan of our Shore Leave series, and so is Larry. And she mentioned us on your show. And it's always nice to connect with other Trek podcasters.
It is. It's like Star Trek itself is a big family, but like there's like the other part of the family, the people that do what you do,
yes,
which is really fun to connect with. And yeah, she did give you I think Heather a shout out at the very, yes, very end of the show last week.
Yeah, Heather is my co-host on the Shore Leave series, and she's made some appearances on some of our other series as well. So she's a very big part of the Tricorder Transmissions.
Hi, Heather. We'll have to have you on later.
Oh, she would love that.
I hope you don't take that as a threat.
Not at all. Not at all. She's this is the Shore Leave series is her first foray into podcasting, and she's fallen in love with the medium, and she's gotten the bug. So she's with us, and she's starting to make her appearances on other shows as well. So I'm sure she would absolutely love to jump on and talk to you.
Excellent. That'll be fun. We'll have to get one of her favorite episodes. We usually hit on news a little bit before. I think I mentioned it in last week's podcast, which would be the one that it'll be coming out, but that I recorded during Buffalo Comic Con, is that Star Trek Discovery got pushed back several months. And to me, this wasn't a surprise. I mean, no news other than the couple things the directors are looking at. No leaks from anywhere. So it's kind of like no casting announcements either. So I'm kind of like, I'm disappointed, but I'm not really, like, surprised.
I wasn't surprised at all. And, you would have thought that getting this late in the year, they're talking about getting the show out at the beginning of 2017, and we've had no real major casting announcements. You know, like I said, no leaks. I was not surprised at all that they were delaying it. And I think it'll be a better show, for taking that extra time. I was actually kind of worried about it a little bit, that we were getting so close to the day that it was going to debut, without it. They hadn't even at Mission New York, a few weeks ago, the convention in New York City, they had a panel dedicated to Star Trek Discovery, and they didn't really drop any new information. And you would have thought that that would have been the perfect medium, a big convention in New York City dedicated to the 50th anniversary of Trek, and they didn't announce anything new. So you kind of had to think at that point.
Yeah, I mean, when they first announced it, I was like, I figured we'd at least get, casting and news at Star Trek Las Vegas. Because, that would be, prime time to, start talking about that. But we got nothing at Star Trek Las Vegas, that I'm aware of.
I was there.
A week or two before, they had, like, the little ship trailer launch at Comic-Con. But, like, I was just floored that I heard nothing from anybody who went to Star Trek Las Vegas about it.
We were lamenting. We were at Las Vegas. Actually, this past Las Vegas convention was the first time that all of my Tricorder Transmissions team was together in one place. So,
oh, that must be awesome.
It was amazing. We had our third anniversary party at the Rio Hotel during the convention, because our third anniversary actually fell on August 4th. It fell exactly during the convention. So it was amazing that we were all there for our anniversary. But we were all kind of sad that there was no panel and no information that was debuted there. That's the biggest Trek convention there is. And you would have thought that was the perfect venue to drop some new Discovery info. But there was nothing there.
Yeah, I was for it. So, I mean, because that never happened, this delay didn't surprise me in the least. And I hope it'll be good. I mean, Brian Fuller's got his hands full with American Gods and apparently lots of digital, you know, male members being made for that. I read a new, like, an article on IO9, like, lots of digital stuff down there for that show that he's going to be doing, so... I wonder if that's going to make its way to Star Trek accidentally.
Who knows?
Who knows? Since he's not scared to push the limits. I mean, I loved the Hannibal show that he did, and that really pushed the limits of, you know, network television violence.
It really did. There was many times during Hannibal that I was surprised that was on network television. It was very good, though, and very gritty, and I'm really... at a point where I'm starting to get tired of dark television and dark movies, and I'm looking for a little more light and happiness on TV.
Star Trek come out soon, although Star Trek might not even be that with Brian Fuller and Nicholas Meyer at the helm. Because, yeah, I mean, Nicholas Meyer's, you know, Star Treks were fantastic, but, I mean, they weren't, like, brining shite beacons of hope, really.
No, well, we may be in store for another DS9, so more Dark Trek.
Which, Deep Space Nine is my favorite series, so I would not wince at that.
Well, I won't flip my cards and talk about my favorite series yet.
Well, speaking of your favorite series, I assume it would be the original series, because when I asked you for your episode you wanted to speak with when you come here today, you immediately said Devil in the Dark with, like, no hesitation, pause, or, like... I was like, oh, you're not even going to think about it?
No, not at all.
It's like, so, instant.
Yeah, 30 seconds from me not saying I was going to flip my cards, I guess I'm going to flip my cards. So yeah, TOS is my favorite series for a number of reasons, and Devil in the Dark is my favorite Trek episode of all series of all time. So for many, many reasons, which I'm sure that I'm going to get into as we talk a bit about the episode. But great thing about Devil in the Dark is it's also Leonard Nimoy's favorite Trek episode.
And before William Shatner changed his mind, it was his favorite too.
It was. It was. And it's also – this is another great thing. I don't know how many of your listeners know a guy by the name of Jim Morehouse. He goes by Enterprise Extra on Twitter. He was actually on Star Trek Enterprise, and he and I – both have the same favorite episode, and we bonded over that. So this episode is super special to me, even beyond being my favorite Trek episode. It's brought me to know other awesome Trek fans.
That's excellent. So how did that happen?
Wow. So, yeah, that brings me back to Star Trek Las Vegas 2015. We had been doing our podcast, Tricorder Transmissions, for a couple of years at that point. And we had done a series of small episodes with this awesome band called 5 Year Mission. I don't know if you've listened to any of their stuff, but they're an original series band, and they're doing songs for every episode of the original series. So original songs for every episode of the original series. And we had them on, and we did a series called What Are Little Songs Made Of, which was a track-by-track analysis, kind of a behind-the-music sort of thing, on their first album, Year One. And Jim Morehouse, Enterprise Extra, is a big fan of 5 Year Mission, so he listened to all of those and wanted to meet up with us at STLV, Las Vegas Convention 2015. So we did that, and we met up, and we just you know, as Trek fans do, when you meet up, you start talking about Trek and your favorite episodes. And we quickly discovered that we had the same favorite episode. And he's a phenomenal guy. He's got a website called Trek Ranks, and where he ranks every episode of every series. So you can go and check that out. And there's a lot of great stuff there. He's been on our show a couple times. Really phenomenal dude. And, you know, it's one of those things where podcasting, you know, kind of led me to a whole nother world of Trek fandom and a whole bunch of friends that I probably would have never met without being in this business.
Oh, yeah. I feel exactly the same way. I mean, like, meeting you was through that medium because of Lonnie Moss and her knowing you and just the interesting web that is Star Trek fandom and then the subculture fandom subreddit of Star Trek podcasting.
Yeah, it opens up a whole new world and you meet all sorts of people that you would have never met from all over the country and all over the world. And you know, it's a very unique fandom. You know, I'm a fan of other franchises as well, but I don't feel like any of those communities are nearly as tight knit as the Trek community.
I would say you're probably right for the most part. I mean, I don't follow the other fandoms as hard to know that for sure, but I would support you on that statement. With Devil in the Dark.
Going back around full circle.
Full circle. Ahead. So, Devil in the Dark, if you haven't seen this episode, there's going to be spoilers.
Yes. Yes. Many, many, many spoilers.
Many, many spoilers.
But for an almost 50-year-old episode, you've got no excuse.
None! And you're listening to a Star Trek podcast. I would have hoped you've seen at least the original series.
Yeah, really. Come on, people.
Listening to a Star Trek podcast. But Devil in the Dark, it has the only opener that doesn't feature the Enterprise or the crew of the Enterprise.
Oh, you stole one of my discussion
points. No, I'm sorry. Well,
no, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. This is something that a lot of people don't pick up on. They're like, really? But yeah, it's the only stinger, the only original series opener that doesn't feature any Enterprise crew or the ship itself. So pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's actually a really nice looking set as far as TOS sets look. I mean, it's a really nice cave. I mean, they use lots of caves in TOS and Star Trek in general. There's always a cave, but this is a pretty nice looking cave set for 1966.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and you see this cave set reused a lot of times during TOS, famously in What Are Little Girls Made Of? So you see a lot of reused cave sets, but this was it's so effectively used in this episode. Yeah,
the shots of it are like really, really excellent, and they stand out really great in high definition too, which is pretty amazing.
Oh, you're a Blu-ray owner?
Well, no, I mean they stream high definition on Netflix.
That's true. I just assumed when you said HD,
Blu-rays of the movies, but I don't and the first three seasons of Next Gen, but I don't have the TOS on Blu-ray.
Ah, confession.
Confessions of a real Trekkie.
Confessions. Yeah. So, do we want to talk a little bit about the episode itself before we jump into the details?
Yeah, just in case people have not seen it so they can have some idea of what's going on. If you would love to take it away, that would be fantastic.
Oh, wow, I'm on the spot. So this episode centers around a mining facility that is mining a very precious mineral called Pergium that Starfleet needs to power its ships and other systems. So there's a monster that they've unearthed in this mining colony that is killing the miners, and the Enterprise is sent to investigate what's going on.
Miners, not miners. Sorry.
No, it's cool. So, you know, we've got our Kirk and Spock beam down to the planet to check things out and wind up being involved in an investigation, which is winds up being a very creepy and atmospheric episode of Trek where they're trying to figure out what exactly is killing all of these miners. And it turns into a very incredible episode overall that has a lot of wonderful deep meanings and character moments that happen throughout it. And let's talk a little bit about the episode itself. We'll go through the talking points and we'll get to the ending. I don't want to spoil it right away before get to it. But
Well, I love the beginning whenever they're they're at the Kirk and Spock beam down, and they're questioning the people, and the guy's like, I shot it, and Spock's like, you shot at it.
At it, yes.
And the guy's like, it's like, no, I got a really good clean shot, but previously he said he didn't get a good look at it. How do you know if you got a good shot on it if you didn't get a good look at it?
Well, that's an excellent point, but this is one of the things. Spock should
have pointed that out. That's illogical.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that I really love about this episode, though, is when Kirk and Spock first get down to the planet surface, they get down into the caves and they're talking to these guys about what's going on. You've got this juxtaposition between the miners who are living the situation. A lot of them are petrified of what's going on. They're seeing their friends and colleagues getting killed, and they seem to have no way to stop it from happening. But you've got, you know, Kirk and his bravado is almost laughing it off at first, right? And Spock is kind of, you know,
you guys can't handle an indigenous species? Come on.
Exactly. But you've got – and so you've got this setup at the beginning where, you know, Kirk's like, listen, you know, I've seen tons of stuff in my time. I've dealt with aliens. I've dealt with gods who I've defeated, right? And here I am, like, okay, so you got a monster who's killed a couple people, big deal.
Just burns
you
know, them up. I can handle fine.
It. Right? Yeah, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. You've got Phaser 1, but we've got Phaser 2. We can take this thing out. And Spock is, you know, he's poking holes in the guy's story, like you said.
Oh, so, shut at it.
Yeah, right. So they're coming in going, you know, we're the experts. We have no qualms that we can take care of this. You know, you guys are just inexperienced workers. You know, we're cool. So, and as the episode goes on, that perspective changes, right?
Oh, yes.
So you've got that evolution and those character moments. But I love the fact that they come in, you know, with this ego at first. And, you know, Kirk's famous for his ego. But, you know, Spock, not so much. But he's definitely got one at the beginning of this episode.
Oh, sure. I mean, even at the end of the episode, he's got one.
For sure. So another great thing, one of the big, big things, and if you listen to the Tricorder transmissions, if anybody is familiar with what we do over there, you'll know that I'm a huge fan of non-humanoid aliens in Star Trek, especially in the original series. There's not nearly enough non-humanoid aliens.
I mean, most Star Trek, there's not nearly enough. I mean, I feel like Enterprise is the one big series where we get lots of non-human aliens with the aquatics and mm-hmm. the reptilians, and I mean, not really, I'm talking the insectoids. The reptilians are basically just humanoid.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, the original series, you can explain it away with budgetary restrictions,
I mean,
right?
Even in Next Gen, I mean, I can't think of one. I mean, there's the other silicon creature, I suppose, and the crystalline entity.
Crystalline entity, right? But, yeah, I mean, like, there were some.
I mean, but those aren't like, I don't know, like regular appearing things usually. There's like one or two offs.
Yeah, very few. And, you know, most of them, even if they're, you know, hairy beasts, they're still two legs, two arms, and a head. You know, it's one of those things where.
Like Tellarites?
Yeah. Yeah, pigmen. Right?
Those aren't very human looking.
No, but they're so fingers. Few. You know, you got the Horta in the original series, you've got the Cloud from Obsession. There's not a hell of a lot of them.
The other
you got the
other two
omelets,
or three clouds.
Right?
Yeah. The other two or three clouds from TOS.
Yeah, the flying omelets from Operation Annihilate.
Oh yeah.
What else do you got? There's not a hell of a lot of them.
Roof pizzas.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like pizza delivers you.
Yeah, no, I'm seriously, and that's one of the things that I really love about this episode. It sounds like something silly, but you know, the Horta itself, the costume is pretty good. I mean, if you look at it for the time that it came out, you know, the mid to late 60s, you know, that effect, and you mean it's a guy with, you know, a blanket,
giant shag carpet over
top of him.
I love the way he moves, though. It's like you can totally tell it's a guy underneath it, but it's like it's just weird enough that it works being an alien.
Yeah,
the way the front and the back like move, like you can definitely tell its hands and legs going up and down underneath it. But it's like, God, that could be the way it moves.
For
it's
sure,
really interesting.
You know, when I was the first time I saw it. Was in the late 70s, you know, dating myself here. You know, I was probably 5 years old, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and watching, you know, TOS syndication on television as a little kid. And I remember that episode really stuck out to me because I was petrified of the Horda. And I'll throw this out here on your show. This is something I've never admitted on a podcast before. So
you're hearing it here first, guys.
Brace yourself. My fear, my biggest monster fear when I was a little kid was the Blob. I was hugely afraid of the Blob. I thought Dracula didn't scare me. You know, mummies, zombies, Frankenstein, Wolfman, none of that stuff scared me. The Blob terrified me.
I think Horda, as a kid, the scariest thing to me was the upside down omelet, the ceiling omelets, because it was just like it falls on you and you're dead. It doesn't even weigh a lot. It just touches you and you're dead. That was frightening to me. Like a lot of people like say their first scary thing in Star Trek was like the Gorn.
I was never scared of the Gorn.
Gorn never bothered me. Like a little piece of like fleshy thing that just falls on you and it'll kill you like instantly. I'm like, that's a bad day. That's scary. I don't want to go anywhere near something that can just touch me for a second and I'll die.
Absolutely. And you wouldn't even see it coming most of the time.
Because it's on the ceiling.
It's kind of on the side of a wall. You're just walking by. It flies out, lands on your back. You're done, right?
Unless you're Vulcan, because you can live through pretty much anything if you're Vulcan.
Yeah, you can stave off the pain enough. But
pain!
But yeah, I mean, the Horda was very blob-like to me.
Yeah.
And that really stuck out in my mind. So that's my memory of seeing it when I was a kid, but only as I got a little older and understood what the episode was really about did I appreciate it more and have it grow into my favorite Star Trek episode.
That's fascinating. From fear to favorite.
Yes, from fear to favorite. And favorite for many, many reasons, not just because I like it. But for a lot of different reasons. I'm sure we'll get into all of them as we talk through this.
Almost definitely. And I love that Kirk, beams down a whole battalion of red shirts.
Yeah, almost. I think it's almost the largest number of on-screen red shirts in a single shot in any Trek episode. I think there's seven at one point.
I love how they're lined up on the ship. And then, like, almost the very next scene, or, like, a minute or two later, they're just lined up in the cave, like, in the same order. And that guy in the front, that old one, I'm like, how did you live so long wearing a red shirt? Did you just get transferred? Come on, you just got transferred. There's no way you're that old and have worn that shirt the entire time you've been in Starfleet.
I don't know, man. You gotta go with Scotty on that. Scotty lived for a very, very long time.
Died and was brought back, so Scotty almost doesn't even count.
Well, I mean, did he really die? He was stuck in a transporter beam.
No, Nomad killed him, and Nomad brought him back.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. We're getting into a whole different episode now.
Well, we're talking about red shirts dying. I'm just saying. Scotty technically has died.
Nomad also wiped out the memory of Uhura,
She doesn't speak Klingon and Romulan fluently in the original series versus the Kelvin timeline. She never bothered learning them again.
Oh, I love it. Oh, that's great. That's great. I never thought about that. That's beautiful.
Because it's like, how come Uhura is so much smarter than she is in, like, Nomad?
Well, wait until the JJ movie where Nomad comes in.
Well,
it's going to get done.
Zoe Saldana has not sung yet in Star Trek, so she might be safe.
Well, there's an interesting point.
Because Nomad wiped her mind because she sang. It's like, singing is stupid. You're stupid. I'm going to wipe your memory so you don't do less of that. All of less of that.
So I never thought about that. Nomad just doesn't like singing. I guess it evolved so far that singing is pointless. It just wanted to silence her.
Is that classical music? I'm going to silence that.
You're done. Next time I see a homicidal space probe, I'm not going to sing or
don't sing
or hum
or play any music around him.
No, I'm just going to stand there.
Like, make sure he can't hear your iPod. He will get you. And unless you can contradict him and make him get in a self-contradictory loop.
Now, only Kirk can argue machines to death. That's his thing. He is a pro at arguing machines to death.
Yes, he is. It's a really good talent, and more people should learn it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it can't be taught. That's a skill that can't be taught. That's creative thinking. So you have to learn that on your own. You got to play with Legos and Lincoln Logs when you're a kid.
Must be born with it.
Yes, some problem solving skills.
Basic logic.
Yes, but
nothing deep like Spock knows. You guys, just the basics, just enough to confuse a machine.
Yes. Well, yeah. Let's not get into other things like iMUD and Ultimate Computer. And there's tons of them.
Exactly. But yeah, back to
Devil in the Dark.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, I got so many things that I can say about this episode. But overall, you know, the episode, as many TOS episodes do, it has, you know, messages. It has some social commentary aspects of it that, you know, among which are animal rights, which is near and dear to my heart. Tolerance, understanding, you know, embracing difference, not judging a book by its cover, you know, fear of the unknown, which is a lot of these issues are still prevalent today. If you turn the news on or watch our presidential election stuff that's going on right now, you understand.
Log into Facebook.
Yeah, log into Facebook, social media, anything. You know, a lot of these things that this episode deals with are still issues in our society today. And I think that the overall message of, you know, fear of the unknown, coming up against something that you don't understand, something you can't communicate with,
yeah,
you know, something that speaks a different language than you, you know, or doesn't speak at all. And, you know, how do you deal with that? How do you confront it? How do you get over it and understand it and come to some sort of a mutual agreement and a mutual existence? And I think this episode really explores that concept very well. It illustrates it very well.
Lots of themes in this one. My dad, when I was growing up, was a preacher. And, you know, I think at least a couple times he actually referenced this episode in sermons, and as this was a pro-life message, you know, like don't kill the babies. You gotta keep them around. Let the mother take care of them. You know, you don't kill the unborn. You know, things like that.
I didn't even think about it that way. Yeah.
And he's like, that's a very strong message that's presented in this thing. And so he, you know, I think at least two different sermons I've heard he's brought this up, or Star Trek at least, but I'm pretty sure this episode in particular.
You know, that really brings to my mind something that I love about Trek in general, and that there are so many ways to interpret these episodes and make them your own. You know, that's something that I hadn't thought of prior. And I've watched this episode, I don't know, probably 30, 40 times. And that's something that didn't occur to me, that angle.
Now you've got to watch it again.
Well, I'm sure I will watch it many more times in my lifetime. But, yeah, that's something that a lot of my Trek friends and I talk about, is that there's so many ways to look at these episodes and interpret them and understand them and process them and love them.
And even talk about them, like, you know, even on podcast, we could cover the same episode. I could have different guests on, and people would say, we'd say different things about it, because it's so, it means different things to different people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I have so many things that I want to bring up about this episode. That's only just a small piece of it. So,
although that was kind of spoilery, talking about the pro-life message, because we don't know yet what's happening in this episode.
Yeah, so we'll get there. We'll definitely get there. But,
one day.
This is something that's connected to that, though. My next thing is kind of connected to that. So there's a science aspect to this episode that I really, really love, and that is the theory that life can be based on other elements, in this case silicone, right? So it's the Horta is a silicon based life form.
Silicone is what's in implants.
That's true, sorry. You want to edit that out? Silicon. Sorry.
No, it's funny.
No, it is funny, but silicon based life form. So the Horta,
I want to meet a silicone based life form.
Well, Kim Kardashian, is she on the show?
No, I think the joke was Pamela Anderson is a silicone based life form.
Oh, well, I'm talking – well, that may have been in the 90s, maybe a more relevant reference, but
– Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm
we're dating ourselves
dating
again.
Dating ourselves.
That's okay. So the Horta is a silicon-based life form, and there's a little bit of debate on that in the episode where McCoy says
you're
it's really
fantasy.
Only theorized, right? Yeah. But, but this is before we learn, you know, what the Horda really is. So Spock comes up with that theory that it could be based on a different – that's why they can't pick it up and they're having trouble tracking it, right? So, you know, McCoy's, well, it's really only a theory. But I love the fact that Star Trek took that on and brought that science on the television, even for just a brief episode. You know, it's not mentioned again.
It's fascinating, you know,
but it's amazing
that life could be, you know, way different. And I think for the – I didn't even realize they were even postulating that kind of stuff that long ago, that there could be life that is, you know, like that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I love that Star Trek brought to the mainstream television audience. And, you know, it's one of the things that makes the original series so special is that they include those little nuggets of science in there. And I think that's one of the things that makes Star Trek so great is that it's endearing and it brings, you know, real – well, at the time it was real science, and now, you know, things that Star Trek had brought to television back then have become realities – but and inspired people to create and invent. So,
yeah, for sure. I'm just a little bit disappointed that they forgot about the silicon life forms in Next Gen. It's like, that's impossible.
Well, we've created the Kardashians, so it's reality now.
It is reality now.
Oh God.
Oh, it's so bad. And like,
it's so bad.
And this is totally off topic, but it's just hilarious that I watched the OJ series that was on FX, and how like the Kardashian's dad was like a good friend of OJ. I'm like, that's so weird. It's like, you
isn't
know,
that crazy?
Yeah, it's just like, oh, his daughter is like the big modern fad, whatever. You know, people will have to know about and watch. I'm like, I don't care, but it's just so funny that, you know. Just how it's how the people in Hollywood are connected, and it's just so weird.
It is, and that's one of the reasons why I don't watch television that often anymore. I don't really want to know about these people, and that's all that television tries to feed me. So I've unplugged.
Unplugged. Well, good thing Star Trek will be coming to CBS All Access instead of regular television. You don't have
to. Yeah, I can watch it on my iPad or my computer and not have to actually subscribe to cable to see it. But so getting back to the Horda itself, something else that I really love about this is that, you know, this episode takes the time to create an imaginative vision of an alien race. The Horda itself is not just a killing machine. It's not just a lump of silicon that melts people. They actually take the time to give you a little bit of backstory and create a mythos around the Horda itself. So, you know, the entire race dies off except for one that is left to watch over the eggs and the hatching young and take care of them. So, you know, they take a few minutes of the episode to tell you that story. And, of course, that comes after Spock mind melds with the Horda. But I love that they took the time to think up that backstory and tell us, you know, how this race exists and how it procreates and continues to survive inside this planet. So that to me is fascinating and endearing in a way.
Yeah, it is. It is. It gives them like it makes you kind of feel for them and understand them and make them into almost people, even though they're giant shag carpets.
Yeah, well, it personifies them, and they also, you know, without explicitly stating it, you know, they give the Horda a bit of an intelligence in the fact that it steals vital equipment and hides it away, but doesn't destroy it, right? It's a bargaining chip, so it doesn't just break in and melt the equipment. It actually takes a vital piece and stores it somewhere. In a chamber.
How?
That's a very but doesn't actually destroy the piece of equipment. So that to me,
how does it do this?
Well, that's a whole nother story. Let's not get into that.
It has no arms and legs.
Well, maybe it can control the flow of the corrosive agent that it uses to melt things. But I like the fact that it's able to do that and think creatively. So, you know, the Horda, you know, they go out of their way to make it known that the Horda doesn't necessarily want to kill. It's only killing because it it feels it has no choice. But because
they're killing it, the Horda's future by destroying the eggs.
Yes, the silicon nodules that they're for some reason collecting and destroying because they feel there's no value in those, and they're there to mine precious minerals, right?
Just leave them be, or pile them up in one of your storage lockers or something. Like, why would you destroy it?
Well, I guess they're in the way. They don't really go into a lot of detail on why they destroy them, but I think it's awesome that the Horda tries to find a way to bargain and convince the miners not to continue their ways. But you know, even though it can't
instead
verbally
instead of killing them all, he's just trying to make them leave. He's like, just go away. I don't want to kill you. If I don't have to, but I'll just make you leave. So get rid of the oxygen atmosphere.
Yeah, it's smart. It is absolutely intelligent. So I love that they give the Horda an intelligence. And so that also feeds into the overall message that, you know, just because you can't understand another being doesn't mean that they're not intelligent and worthy of life, just like you are.
Exactly. Kirk's like position changes completely in this episode. He's like,
oh, it does.
Kill it. Kill it. We just got to, We need the Pregea. We need the stuff. Just kill it. Just find it and surround it. Kill it. And then he and Spock go looking for it because Spock does a C-3PO on him. Or I guess, you know, C-3PO does a Spock. I don't know. Chicken or the egg type of statistic there.
Well, Spock also, this is another reason that I love this episode, is that Spock undergoes a bit of a personal transformation in this episode. So, and you know, Spock in near the beginning, he's all about preservation, right? He wants to save the Horda. He wants to study it, the last of its species. It for scientific purposes, it needs to be saved, right? And only after he learns that he even goes so far as to risk his career, right? He circumvents Kirk's orders and attempts to give the red shirts in order to try to preserve the creature.
Try to capture it. And Kirk's like, exactly. I gave no such order.
Exactly. So, you know, Spock kind of goes out on a career limb here and tries to slyly circumvent Kirk's order. But slightly later in the episode when, you know, Kirk is trapped with
face
the Horda.
Face. Yeah.
Exactly. All of a sudden, Spock's caring
like,
for
kill
Kirk.
It. Kill it.
Right,
you're more important to me, Kirk.
Right, the scientific side of Spock, the logical side, and he lets that human part of him come out and insists that Kirk kills the creature because he's too valuable, right? He can't risk the chance that the Horda could kill him. And it's Kirk assumes the more peaceful role. So
which I thought
love
was really strange how Kirk flipped so quick.
Well, I think, you know, I think that's one of the great things about Kirk is that he has the ability to adapt to a situation and change the way he thinks and change his strategy based on the adversary. So when he realizes that he's in almost a stalemate position with the Horda, he doesn't have to kill it, right? He has the trump card. He's got the Phaser 2. He knows that the Phaser 2 can hurt and or kill the Horda, or at least make it retreat. He's like, well, you know what? This thing's not making any hostile moves. In fact, it appears to be, you know, maneuvering itself to keep me from going in a certain direction so that he doesn't feel that he has to kill it anymore. And, you know, he decides to change his tack. And I think that's one of the things that makes Kirk the great captain that he is. He doesn't just stick to one strategy. He can adapt.
He is the Borg.
I think he's a little more sophisticated than the Borg, but okay.
He's adapted. No, no. Good for you, Horta. He adapted. He didn't kill you.
Yeah. So.
Just after he told like 15 of his crew just to kill you on sight. So let's hope, you know, that none of them walk in.
No, well, now they're all too occupied keeping the miners at bay.
I love that scene where they're keeping the miners at bay and they're just like, it's like, oh, look, the camera's on. Now we can, you know, punch the red shirts.
Yeah, well, that's one of the funnier scenes. If you watch some of the background miners in that as they're trying to club some of the security guards, it's you can tell that they're you know, withholding themselves and trying not to actually swing the clubs too hard.
It's a really, really funny scene because, like, it just comes out of nowhere. The red shirts don't even act like they're in trouble. They're just, like, they're all kind of standing in a group. And it's like, oh, look, the camera's on. Let's kill the red shirts. Let's knock them over. And I just think it's hilarious that the miners are so, like, clinging to this place that they'll use clubs even when phasers couldn't hurt it. I'm pretty sure however many joules of force you can swing isn't near enough, isn't near what power output a phaser one could output. So I'm not sure. No. Not sure what you're aiming for, especially since this thing can eat through rock.
Yeah, I don't know what their aim was with those clubs, but I applaud them for, you know, trying to take out the red shirts.
Stick-to-itiveness.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, rolling back to Spock real quick, you know, there are so few episodes where Spock shows emotion. I think this is one of the best displays of his human side in any TOS episode. So, you know, it builds the relationship between Kirk and Spock and fortifies it in such a way that I think this is one of the most crucial episodes. If you want to understand the relationship between those two characters, this is one of the most crucial episodes to watch.
It's a very good dynamic between the two of them in this episode. I love the back and forth and how, like you said a minute ago, that he was, you know, putting his career on the line by, you know, trying to, like, get around Kirk's order, and just his scientific need to study it, and then his need of friendship and Kirk to throw that away to tell Kirk to kill it.
Yeah, it's amazing, and the fact that the two of them flip flop their perspectives during the episode is classic TOS. So, and it's, you know, if you're a big T, if you're a TOS fan and, you know, you watch a lot of these episodes, you've read a lot about them, you know that the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy Trinity is the backbone of that series. And this episode is one of the episodes that really builds up those relationships. And McCoy has some really fantastic moments in this episode as well. In fact, this is the first episode where you get the "I'm a doctor, not a blank."
Yes, reference. I'm not a bricklayer. Oh, it's so, yeah. So good. I love that one.
Yep. And so now, and you get some backstory, and you get some McCoy knowledge that McCoy is not only a doctor who can work on humans, he's also capable of using his medical knowledge to assist a non-human creature, in fact, a silicon-based creature. So McCoy is able to use his adaptability, his knowledge, and is able to beam down some supplies from the Enterprise and ad lib his way through a medical procedure.
It was great. He's like, I'm beginning to think I could cure a rainy day.
Mm-hmm.
I fixed it. This stuff is mostly silicon, so I just mixed the batch up and slapped it on him.
There you go.
I love how he's
like masonry work.
I love how he's got his hands like just deep in mud or whatever it is.
Yeah, he's got it all over his head. It's great. So, you know, it's a brilliant, brilliant McCoy moment. So, you know, all of the members of the Trinity, the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy Trinity, have their fantastic moments throughout this episode. And this is one of those ones where, and it's not, and they're not moments that are shared. They're each individual hero moments, right?
Exactly. And yeah. So through the mind meld, the angry miners run up to them and they're like, "Hey Spock, we can explain this to them and make it a mutually beneficial situation. Since the Horda can move through rock, like we move through air, they can mine for you, and you can get to places you never thought you could get before."
Exactly. So, well, I will confess, in fact, I should send you a picture of this. I actually have a diorama here in my studio of Spock and the Horda from this episode.
Hugging?
No. This is an actual, it's a Diamond Select figure of Spock and the Horda. It's doing, it's the pain moment. So.
Pain!
Yeah, so the great performance by Nimoy, by the way. One of my favorite Nimoy performances is Spock mind-melding with the Horda and sharing the pain. I think you get such an insight into what the link the mind-meld can create between Spock and, you know, another person or creature or in this case.
Or machine.
Yes.
In the case of Nomad.
Yeah, this was actually the first non-humanoid mind meld. So we get to understand that Spock can mind meld with something that's not human, and of course a machine later on.
Which, that doesn't even make any sense.
Well, you never know. I mean, I'm not going to second guess it. But I love the fact that we get to understand the transference of not only emotion but pain through the mind meld. You get to learn a lot about what the mind meld really is.
It's really a joining of two minds.
It really is, and it's not just Spock reading your mind or Vulcan reading your mind. It's actually opening themselves up to potential damage. I mean, we start to think that Spock may suffer some sort of permanent damage from this mind meld. In fact, there's some concern during this mind meld that he can't break out of it, right?
Yeah.
Because the pain is so great, he's losing whatever concentration and may get stuck in it. So that in itself is a lot of exposition into what the mind meld is and how dangerous it can possibly be.
And Enterprise can give you an STD.
Yeah.
Which somehow they fixed that. I guess there's mind meld condoms in post 22nd century or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, Enterprise is great for retconning stuff. So, you know, I largely try to ignore some of the retcons that Enterprise brought in when I'm talking about TOS.
That just never made any sense to me, the mind meld STD, because, like, man, like, people are mind melding all the time in TOS and in the movies and sometimes in Voyager, a whole bunch of mind melds in Voyager.
Yeah, and they never have those lasting adverse effects. So, we could probably do a whole episode on just Enterprise mind melds. Retcons. and Enterprise retcons in general.
Oh, that'd probably be like a series of episodes.
So many of them. There you go. There's an idea for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. There's a couple of other things that I can throw out there. About this episode, from the tone of the episode alone, you've got this creepy vibe. It's almost like a horror movie, right? So you've got the classic TOS use of dramatic lighting, which I think is at its zenith in this episode. There's so many wonderful, wonderful shots with the light draped across characters' faces to convey a mood. With the cave backgrounds. And the overall creepiness, it's phenomenal. So the off-screen sizzling noise that the Horta makes it comes through a wall, and you see just a shot of the victim who's going to get melted, and you hear that sizzling noise. Yeah. It's phenomenal. And the fact that they don't really show you what the Horta looks like until later, you see it take a couple of victims. But you don't know what it looks like.
I love the first victim. It's like the Enterprise is on its way, right? It's like a kid. He's like a kid.
Poor Schmitter. poor Schmitter. I felt so bad for him because
he wanted to see the Enterprise so bad.
He did, and they pat him on the back and tell him it's gonna be fine. Oh, poor Schmitter. Who knows when his tour of duty was probably over in a week or two, right?
He was probably gonna go on the Enterprise somewhere. He was probably going to like Starbase 16, like the next place Enterprise was going to go. He was so excited to see Enterprise.
I feel so bad for him. My God. And, you know, the claustrophobia of the episode, the fact that they're in these caves, there's nowhere to run. You know, you got just some tunnels here and there. The Horta can move through solid rock just like we can move through the air.
It is a classic horror type feel, and it's really well done.
Really, really well done. So, you know, and that's not something that you see in Star Trek for the most part, and especially not something you see in the original series.
I mean, horror, it doesn't really come up much at all in Star Trek. I think the next thing is probably Schisms in TNG. It's probably for like an episode that's kind of going for like a horror vibe.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I don't think there's anything else in the original series that approaches this from a horror perspective, and especially nothing that pulls it off as well.
Oh, sure, yeah.
As Devil in the Dark does.
I can't think of anything. And then Voyager, you've got like the Haunting of Deck 13, which is more like a joke. Yeah,
there you go.
Although I think there is another horror one in Voyager, where Seven of Nine is the only one awake when she has to put the rest of the ship to sleep because they can't survive going through some nebula or something weird. So she's got to be awake with the doctor the entire time. That one comes off as a cool horror vibe too, but those are the only like four episodes that kind of stick out to me that have a horror vibe.
Yeah. No, I definitely would not want to be the only one awake with the doctor in Voyager. I do really like him.
I love Robert Picardo. I would love to hang out with him. I mean,
I do too.
Maybe he could teach me to sing one day. Since he did like singing a lot.
He did.
Teach me how to romance a woman.
Oh, man. So, and of course, this episode has a fantastic resolution, by the way. I love the fact that at the end, the miners have little baby hoarders as pets.
Miners, miners and miners, sorry.
I love it. It's such a great turnaround. I mean, from the beginning of the episode, you would never have thought at the end we would have this peace and harmony between two. And it reminds me so much of, I'm a big animal lover, and it reminds me so much of my own relationships with my pets that I've had over the years. And we can't verbally communicate, but we have this incredible relationship where, you know, we obviously love each other.
Your animal finds per diem for you and you love it.
Exactly. And, you know, I love the fact that it drives home the point that we don't have to be able to communicate verbally to have a meaningful relationship. That's a great, great thing. And I wish more people understood that and were able to embrace that fact. I think we'd have a better world if we all lived by that.
I think we'd have a better world in general if everyone watched Star Trek and tried to act like these people.
You sound a little Shatner-esque there.
Unintentionally, but yes, if that helps drive home the point, I just wish that world leaders would have to sit all together and watch Star Trek together. Like, just do this, please. Yeah. Do the world a favor.
Yeah, it should be required watching, like all the classic novels that we had to read in school. It should make us watch Star Trek.
Instead, yes, I would agree. Moby Dick was not fun to read.
Oh, God. No, it was not.
Let's see, 600 pages, and only 150 of them might have something to do with the story.
And nor was War and Peace, by the way.
I was not subjected to that, but Moby Dick was awful. Oof. Pride and Prejudice and Jane Eyre, I'm like...
Oh, no, we didn't have to do Jane Austen in my school. They did not do Jane Austen.
I was homeschooled, so my dad gave me books to read. And I'm like, well, I don't want to...
Fascinating.
I homeschooled through high school. I think it was up to 8th grade in regular school.
Wow.
So, yeah, those books that I hated was when I was homeschooled. My dad made me read them.
Oh.
I don't think I liked any of the ones I was assigned for school when I was homeschooled. Moby Dick was awful. Jane Eyre was awful. I'm sorry if I'm offending any of you who love classic literature. It's awesome if you like it. I was, 15, 16, 17, 18, through high school. And no, I could not be less interested in these books. Oh.
I will join in with you and I'll vilify myself and say that I'm not a big fan of classic literature either. I'm not going to say it's not to say that it's not good and that you shouldn't like it. It just doesn't appeal to me necessarily. There are very few books that I was assigned in school that I still love today. So I don't know what it is, and I can't really put my finger on it, but again, I'm more of a nonfiction guy.
Yes.
So I like reading technical books and biographies and autobiographies and things like that. So maybe that's part of the reason.
And if it's fiction, it should be like science fiction, like Star Trek or Star Wars. Then I can get into that.
Right. Well, Douglas Adams is my favorite author
of all time. I'm so sad they didn't make other Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxies with Alan Rickman. Oh.
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of Hitchhiker's Guide. All five books are phenomenal. I love them all dearly. The Dirk Gently books are phenomenal. I just love Douglas Adams and his humor. Another side tangent.
Very funny stuff.
But fantastic stuff. So intelligent, so bright, so engaging. you know, that for my occasional forays into fiction, that's where I would go.
Yeah, yeah. I had a summer reading list from school that, like, you know, I could pick the books. So, like, you know, I could find some that I read Lord of the Rings that way, The Hobbit, a couple yes. things. So I was like, okay, these are things I'm not, I'm forced to read them, but at least I can, like, pick my poison instead of, like, you know, instead of, like, being forced to poison.
Tolkien is great. Very verbose, but great. I did enjoy The Hobbit books.
Hard to read.
They are difficult
very hard to read. Because yeah. I was hoping they'd be amazing, and I'm like, oh, this is so hard to read. I'm like 14 or 13. I'm like, this is really, like, losing my attention. I don't care how detailed this guy's wall is. I want to know what the story. Tell me the story. I don't care about the song.
Detail. So much detail.
Which, but, I mean, it's great. And they were able to make beautiful movies because of all this detail. And so, yes. I can't knock it because it's, I mean, those are a couple of my favorite movies.
They're brilliant. The Lord of the Rings films are brilliant, but then, you know, we're diverging again.
We do that a lot on Synthaholics. So,
oh, okay.
So,
okay, fair enough.
So, you know, we can definitely go back to the main topic, but we get off topic all the time.
No, fair enough. I could talk about the Lord of the Rings movies ad nauseum. So that could be a whole other podcast.
Yeah, we could do that because we are going to. Hey guys, once a month going forward, we're probably going to do one non-Star Trek episode a month, just FYI.
Wow. Wow. I'm honored to be on an episode with a big announcement.
Thank you. So, if you want to do Lord of the Rings, maybe we can do Lord of the Rings sometime.
Definitely.
My current schedule I'm wanting to do is I want to do episode Star Wars episode 1, 2, and 3. And
yeah, then, I'll pass on those.
And the, yeah, terrible movies, but
4, 5, and 6, call me.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, Rogue One's coming out in December. So, like, if I do October episode 1, November episode 2, December episode 3, and then early January do Rogue One, I could like, in chronological order.
Okay.
So,
fair enough. I see where you're going.
So, that's, like, a sneak peek, guys. So, that's what may be coming in the near future. But, yeah, I'll call you for episode 4 or 5 or 6, whichever one you'd rather do. Yeah, we can do that.
All of them. Absolutely.
Cool.
I saw them in the theater when I was a kid. I loved them. I'm a huge...
I love that, because I love people who appreciate both Star Trek and Star Wars. I don't get the either-or.
Oh, me neither. Like, I've never been an either-or. I
like,
love both.
Because, like, Star Wars is like your Lord of the Rings in space, and Star Trek is like your Aesop's Fables, where, like, they're trying to teach you something.
Yeah, listen, Star Wars is science fantasy, and it's great. I love it. It's a different animal than Star Trek. So, you know, I've never felt like I could that I had to be a fan of one or the other. I've always felt like it's so easy to love both of them and other science fiction. I don't see why you would wall yourself off
into just one. I mean, Babylon 5 was amazing in its day. It's kind of hard to watch now because early CGI just didn't age well.
No, but you know what? The early stuff was created on an Amiga. So, and I was an Amiga owner at the time. So I have a soft spot for Babylon.
It's like a part of pride owning that the Amiga, yeah. And then, you know, Battlestar Galactica was also really good. So, I mean,
oh, good lord. I watched the original Battlestar Galactica when I was a little kid, and I loved the reboot. So,
podcast. I didn't see the original. I've only seen the reboot with Ronald D. Moore. I mean, I love Ronald D. Moore because of his work in, you know, Next Gen and DS9.
Of course. Well, you know what? If you go back now after having watched the reboot and watched the original one, it may not hold up. But just, you know, try to erase your memory of the reboot and embrace the original for the time in which it appeared.
Sure, sure. I'll have to do that one day. Devil in the Dark. At the very end, they're sitting on the bridge and they're accusing Spock of being more and more human, and it's just a great banter back and forth.
Oh, the classic TOS episode comedy ending, right? and the Horta loves Spock's ears.
Oh, she thought my ears were fascinating because they said the Horta thought humanoids were ugly.
Oh, of course.
And so they took a while to get used to it. And so Bones is like, what'd they think of your ears? And it's like, they thought that was the best part of me.
Exactly. And he didn't have the heart to tell her, the hoarder, that he was the only one that had those ears, right? So vain,
Mr. Spock. Yeah. So vain.
But a wonderful comedic ending to the end of this episode. And it puts a wonderful period on the end of the sentence. So I think this is pretty much a perfect episode of the original series.
So I see no reason I should stand here and be insulted.
Be insulted, exactly.
Which is a great comedy ending. Much more funny than the end of Enemy Within, where Spock's like, yeah, you kind of liked it when he was attacking you. I'm like, that's dark.
Yeah, well, that episode is dark anyway. So Shatner performance in The Enemy Within. But there are some moments in that episode that I wonder about.
But, like, just I can't believe Leonard Nimoy would have went along with that line.
Mm-hmm.
As progressive and, you know, as, you know, a brilliant and, you know, guy he is, where he's like, oh, you kind of liked where you were almost getting raped. I'm like, yeah. That's really creepy, Spock.
Yeah, the treatment of Janice Rand in that episode is oh god, I'm that would never happen on television today, and it's, well, unless you're on cable. But I think that and the fact that the episode implies that Kirk has an inner rapist is frightening to me. I don't want to think that
it's what makes him so good at starship battles, the inner rapist.
Yeah, I don't want to think that men in general, if we were split in two parts, that our quote unquote bad side would be a rapist.
Automatically.
It's a horrible, horrible thought.
That's like the most basic. I mean, I get what they were going for. Like, you know, your animal instincts and your most basic thing. You know, it's like, you know, eating, sex, and like, you know, protection. So, I mean, it makes sense thematically, but like, they could have been a little bit more tactful.
Especially
with Spock. I mean, like, especially with Spock. Like,
they didn't necessarily need to go there. They could have gotten the point.
They could have had a funny ending instead of a really creepy ending.
Well, and they could have gone in a different angle with the evil Kirk. They didn't necessarily have to go there. They could have chosen another violent, quote unquote, violent angle to go on, like just beat, like he could have just gone around beating people up.
I think if Janice Rand wasn't in the show, that might have been a thing, but because it was still so early and she was still kind of part of it, I feel like just her character being there kind of made it had to go that way. Because because that was the kind of the play they were supposed to have, like this, right. I love you, but not really.
Yeah, they were supposed to have that kind of relationship, and it was supposed to be that whole sexual tension thing between the two of them, and they changed their minds later on.
Especially since Kirk was going to be a ladies' man to all the people, and that wouldn't be fair to Janice, so let's just write her off the show.
Right. Well, yeah, that's a whole nother deep story. I'll put a plug out there for Mark Cushman's These Are the Voyages books.
Oh, and they're fantastic.
Unbelievable. If you're interested in learning about what happened with the Janice Rand character and Grace Lee Whitney, those books, this volume one, will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about the great. And it's a sad, sad story. But those books,
they were just as mean to her off the set as they were in the script of that episode.
If not more so. Exactly. Exactly, and I think we don't need to say too much more.
No, you should go check out those books.
Oh, please do. Mark's a great guy. He's a fantastic author. Brilliant, brilliant guy. If you don't have those books and you're a Star Trek fan, you owe it to yourself to get those books.
Most definitely. So, what were some of your key standout? I mean, we've already kind of covered some of them as we discussed Devil in the Dark. But what are some of your other like really standouts? Things that you just love that made you pick this instantaneously without a thought.
Oh, geez. Well, I guess I'll rehash a couple of my points. So non-humanoid alien, love the fact that this is a blob for sake of argument. The message of the episode to me is almost unparalleled. I love the fact that this episode is preaching tolerance, animal rights for one thing, the appreciating differences, nonverbal communication and you know, taking the time to understand somebody or something that you can't communicate with and forging a relationship with it despite the fact that you may be afraid of it. Because, you know, I think a lot of us are taught to fear the unknown and fear something that we can't communicate with. I think it's – if all of us embraced difference and embraced you know, the fact that we have empathy and can communicate beyond words with other creatures and other living beings, I think we'd all be in a better place.
This is why Star Trek needs to be in schools, like we said earlier.
Yeah,
Star Trek absolutely. For schools.
Yes. I think this is also probably one of the best representations of horror in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much great use of lighting and camera angles and acting and sound in this episode that makes it stand out against so many other episodes of the series.
I think one of the only thing that I can think of off my mind that tops it in TOS as far as lighting is probably the Balance of Terror.
Oh, God, yes.
Balance of Terror has some of the best lighting of the... And it's just...
So much drama.
And you don't even see it ever really again. Like, when Uhura comes up to the front and they've got, like, that really bright white light from the view screen. Like, mm-hmm. like it's like a light behind it. Like, it's a TV. Like, you know, it's just that the lighting, it's so dramatic on the bridge there. And, like, I don't think you ever see that kind of lighting again on the bridge.
You know, I think that's something that is underappreciated. You know, I know that TOS fans appreciate it, but, you know, people who downplay the original series, if you look at a body of work, all 79, well, 80 episodes if you count The Cage, but the use of dramatic lighting in TOS is iconic. It's incredible what they were able to do with such a limited budget. And the genius of the shadows that they cast in so many different episodes, like, you know, shadows that cover part of someone's face during a close-up dialogue session. And it just adds so much that you don't really appreciate until you think about it. So, you know, and this episode is a great example of that, as are many, like, you know, Doomsday Machine. Phenomenal lighting, especially when you're looking at Commodore Decker sitting in the captain's chair. So many great moments of tension, and the light that is cast across his face during those scenes just helps you.
So menacing. It's like you want to hate him.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's not just the dialogue. It's
just looking at him. It's like, I don't like him.
Right. It's just the visual. You could press the mute button and not listen to a word of dialogue and just look at the way he's shot and the way the light is cast on him.
And also the way you hate him. Just his body language, too.
Yeah, you hate it. And, you know, I think that's something that doesn't get done as much in television today. You know, I think we have larger budgets. We have CG that's cheaper and easier to do. And I just don't think that we need to use a lot of the devices that we had to use back then to create those dramatic effects as much. And I think it's underappreciated, but, you know, going back and looking at TOS, this episode in particular, phenomenal use of lighting, phenomenal use of sets. And sure, you could look at the cave sets and go, yeah, it's just a bunch of styrofoam or walls or whatever.
It's well painted and extremely well lit. It's like, because at the beginning, it's a really good looking cave set for
absolutely
for you
phenomenal
know, for you know, the time, and even you know even in the 80s and 90s, it's still a really good looking cave set. Comparatively to some other things I've seen on television.
Absolutely. Well,
I was reading the Memory Alpha like right before we started talking, and I saw that I didn't know this before, or if I did, I've forgotten it, but William Shatner's father passed away while they were filming this episode.
Yep.
And they were going to put it on hold and let him go sit at the funeral. I was like, nope. He's like, no, let's get it done. Yep. You know, if it's the, you know, the back of my head, let's let my stand in do it. But all my speaking lines, let's get them done, and then we'll go through. And, like, that kind of, like, bad news, and you're doing your work. And he, mm-hmm. and, like, looking back at it, I can't even really tell. Like, he's
nope.
being perfect Kirk all the way through.
Yep, and there are some interviews that you can find out there on YouTube where he talks about how he was able to get through that tough time in his life with the help of his castmates.
Leonard Nimoy.
Yep.
Or the Memory Alpha said that William Shatner thought mind meld with the Horta lines were really funny. The pain! Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that happening. I wonder how many times they had to redo it if William Shatner was laughing at it on set.
Yeah. I think there was an interview that was on the original VHS version of Devil in the Dark from many, many years ago, where Shatner talked specifically about how funny he thought that part of the show was. But in the same interview, he also talked about how much his castmates helped him, you know, get through that very, very difficult time in his life. And it's very endearing. I love to hear about ensemble casts like this, you know, especially because, you hear so much, so many bad things about Shatner from the TOS times where, a lot of it's true, especially if you read those Mark Cushman books. You'll hear there's a lot of stuff in there about Shatner and
what he did. Basically sabotaging other people.
Exactly.
So he could get more face time on screen. Like,
exactly.
I mean, I think the only person who liked him was like Nimoy and maybe mm-hmm. DeForest.
Yep.
Everyone else really didn't like him.
Yeah. Well, he was, you know, appropriating other people's dialogue and, you know, stealing lines for himself. But yeah, there's so much of that went on, but it's always great to hear positive things that happened behind the scenes of the show that kind of counterbalance a lot of the negative stuff. And, you know, you want to believe that the people that you invest yourself in, these actors and actresses on these shows, are good people. And it's tough to it's tough to swallow when you hear all this negative stuff. And so when you hear some positive stuff, it's always encouraging.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Shatner, his body of work and his thing in Star Trek. I've never met him, but I mean, I have heard mostly negative things about how he treats fans and or, you know, his castmates didn't like him. I've seen interviews with
I can attest to that.
With James Doohan. And just, you know, James Doohan's like, you know, I think Kirk's an amazing character, but like, Shatner, I don't really like him very much. It's like, wow, it's just, you know, his face. He's so totally excited about Kirk and Star Trek. And then he talks about the man who played Kirk and his whole demeanor just changes. And it's really, really sad that happened. Because, I mean, I've had, you know, heard interviews with the people from Star Trek Continues, and I've had a couple of them on my show, and they're always like, oh, it's just, you know, we're like best friends. We hang out afterwards. We spend, I did college theater, and like, it was great hanging out with all the people, you know, before a show and after a show. Like, that was like the highlight. I mean, you know, performing is great, but I mean, being with those people was just great. I just can't imagine, like, you know, being, you know, TV's different, but still, like, you're working with these people, then you're not, why not try to, you know, be good and, you know, be friends with them.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave you with this about Shatner. When I met Shatner in 2014 for a photo op in Las Vegas, we were told by his handler before we went up to get the picture that you were not allowed to touch him. You were not allowed to otherwise try to engage him in conversation. You could say, hello, Mr. Shatner, and that was about it. You were not allowed to interface with him at all. So my photo op with him, I look like deer in headlights. I'm just kind of standing there. It's kind of sad. It was a huge moment for me, being such a TOS fan.
Getting to meet him, yeah.
You met him without meeting him.
Yeah, it was just the shell of the man because
he
disenfranchised barely acknowledged. With Star Trek, sort of?
Well, no, I think that he appreciates Trek a lot more nowadays than he used to. But I think that he still has fans at an arm's length for the most part, and that's not to say that he doesn't acknowledge fans, because, you know, my friends in Five Year Mission who've been the house band at Star Trek Las Vegas a couple of times have had interactions with Shatner backstage, and he's a little bit more engaging back there than he is with his fans during photo ops. But, you know, you could argue that it's because he wants to keep the line moving and make as much money as possible and not have fans engage him for 2 or 3 minutes telling him, you know, stories about themselves or asking him questions. Yeah. But still, you know, the fact that he's got a handler telling you don't talk to him and don't touch him. You know, that's a little off-putting. And, you know, I don't want to say negative things about Shatner because, you know, being there and getting a picture with him and being able
to
say,
it's awesome.
It was great. I mean, I was glad that I got to say, I love Star Trek. Thank you for, you know, giving us this great character, snap a picture and then move on.
Yeah.
But, it's sad as a fan to know that he has no interest whatsoever in even engaging you for 30 seconds. Whereas George Takei was completely different when I met George Takei.
Sure,
he was so accommodating and wanted to talk to you for a minute or two and quote unquote gave you your money's worth. So different experiences with different Trek actors.
Definitely, definitely. Well, something we talked about a little bit off. You know, we've been talking about this week is that I heard you were upset that you missed our Star Trek V episode and that you're a Star Trek V apologist. So I just really am curious about this.
Oh, man. God, I'm on the spot. So why don't you, before I do this, why don't you give me a recap really quickly of all of the things that you guys trashed about Star Trek V? Just real quick, you don't have to go with their long diatribe. Just give me the 30-second recap of what you and Bill talked about.
Oh, man, we didn't even spend enough time on the elevator shaft scene.
Okay,
I was like, he brought it up, and I'm like, which of the 11 major problems do you not like about that? We talked like one or two of them. Mm-hmm. It's trying to think of the positive things that we said about it. Like, you know, like he's not a fan of the campfire scenes, where I think the campfire scenes are absolutely mm-hmm. amazing and great character moments between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. And then my other favorite part of the movie is the share your pain moment with McCoy and Spock, and how that's probably the best directed piece of the entire film, where it pans to the side, you see his father, and it pans mm-hmm. the other side, and you see Spock being born in a cave of all places. I mean, those are the two things I said good about it. So just imagine everything else I said something bad about. And I like the fan dance.
Fair enough. Okay. So my defense of Star Trek V is not a long one. And I will say flat out that it is not a great movie. It's not a great Trek movie. And there are a lot of issues with it. But the reason that I love Star Trek V and I apologize for Star Trek V is that out of all of the original series movies, out of all six of them, Star Trek V is the only one that focuses on the relationship between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. It's the only one where all three of them get to have an adventure together. They're not separated. Every other movie, they're separated for the most part. And doing separate things and different things. And yeah, it's campy, but it's the only one where they're all together and they have some of the comedy moments from the original series. There's some serious character moments there. And the relationship between the three builds within the movie. So I excuse a lot of the really bad elements of the movie because there's tons of them. But to me, it is dear to my heart because I get to see three characters that I love having an adventure together like they did on the show that I grew up with. And not to say that the other Trek movies are not good. I still think Wrath of Khan is the best Trek movie ever made. And I don't know if they'll ever be topped. But
I think Star Trek VI is as good.
VI is my number three Trek film. So
three? What's two then?
First Contact. So it's Wrath of Khan, First Contact, and then Undiscovered Country. But Star Trek V also ranks pretty high up there just because of the fact that it's the most original series-like Trek film that there is.
Well, I mean, so, I think we like the same things about it. The characters, their mm-hmm. character moments, the campfire scene, the share your pants yep. scene. You get to learn a whole lot about these characters,
yep.
which is fantastic.
And I even like the elevator shaft scene, so...
What?
I do. I think it's fun. I laugh at it. It's fun. I like the comedy moments. Yeah, it's not great. And listen, so something that
there's not 75 decks on the Enterprise.
I'm with you. Listen, I'm not apologizing for a lot of the issues in the movie. There are tons of them. But something that we do on the Tricorder Transmissions, this was the foundation of our show. We wanted to cover Trek not from whether we liked episodes or not, whether we liked movies or not, whether they were good or they were bad. We wanted to focus on what they brought to the universe. So to me, Star Trek V, I'm not looking at it as a good or a bad movie. I'm looking at it as what it offers me as a fan, what it brings to the Trek universe. And there's a lot of great stuff in there that we can take away from that and move on to the rest of the series with and the rest of the movies.
There's some great stuff in there, and you're right. And I like how you approach things, and you look at how it adds things. Because, I mean, that's a great, very, very great point. And a good way to approach things, definitely, from a more analytical versus like, oh, I didn't like that, or I did like that.
Well, I mean, anybody can do that, right? I mean, we can all sit down in front of a microphone and say, oh, I don't like this episode, or I love this movie. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, every episode of Trek, no matter what series it is, has something to offer, right? And it's up to us to look at it and analyze it and acknowledge it and take away what we take away. And if all we're doing is looking at it as something we like or we don't like, I think we're missing the point.
Oh yeah, and there's a whole lot less to talk about if that's the only thing you're saying. So yeah. I definitely think there's always more to look at and see and see what everything, you know how it adds to the universe. That's a great point, and I like that outlook on Star Trek.
No, it's a lot of fun. It actually makes it easier to talk about Star Trek when you don't have to look at it through that lens of whether it's good or bad, because we can all agree that there's great and terrible Star Trek out there.
Sure. But, and like, in some people's favorite episodes might be the least favorite too. So, I mean, like, my bias does show through a lot of times when we talk about episodes I like or don't like, but I mean, I try not to make that the focus, because I mean, who wants just people like just tearing something apart for an hour and a half or something like that? Just, that may not be fun for some people. So trying to find the fun spots is what it's all about. And that's what I try to do here on Synthaholics.
Yeah, man. You find those little nuggets of things to talk about. And that's comedy. The great thing about Trek, man. That's the great thing about Trek, is it gives us so much to think about and so much to talk about. And that's why we have so many podcasts out there that all look at different things and talk about different things. And it's that's such a beautiful thing. And I love the fact that Star Trek gives us that, and we're all able to, you know, embrace it and talk about it and become friends and you know, build relationships with other people around all of these great parts of Trek.
I agree, and it's been fantastic meeting you tonight, yeah. Talking with you. How can we find you on social media so our listeners can find you and hunt you down and say, hey, and listen to your show and everything, all that awesome stuff?
Yeah, so our website is thetricordertransmissions.com. We're also on Facebook. You can search for us at the Tricorder Transmissions. We're also on Twitter. We have two separate handles on Twitter. One is TTT_pod. That's for our entire Trek network. And we have another handle. It's @ShoreLeave, which is our show that's dedicated to the Trek convention-going community. That's myself and Heather Barker that do that series. But it's all under the Tricorder Transmissions banner. So you can find us at those places. And we also have a presence on redbubble.com if you're looking for any Tricorder merchandise. We have some shirts and mugs and stuff available there that you can take a look at and hopefully purchase if you want. And it's all zero profit, by the way, so we make no money off of it, so it's just there for you if you like it.
Awesome. That's very, very awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Jeff. It's been great getting to talk Star Trek, non-Star Trek, and Devil in the Dark with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, and I hope we'll be able to do some more cross-pollination on our other shows soon.
Yeah, I'd really enjoy it. I'd love to join you, and I'd love to have you join us again. Hopefully, there will be an us next time you join us. I'm sorry. it's a one-on-one type thing tonight.
No, that's quite all right, man. And you're welcome to come on the Tricord Transmissions anytime. So we'll have to get that going in the future.
Yeah, just let me know what you want me to come talk about, and I will be happy to join you.
Absolutely. Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jeff, again, for showing up on the show and talking. It's been fantastic. Live long and prosper, everybody. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find me at David_J_Duncan. You can find the show at Synthaholic Duo. You can find Faith at Faith Hertzberg, Aaron O'Brien at Blackbird 2004, Guy Davis at GS Davis Art, I believe, and USS Tamerlan on Twitter. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. We love your emails. We love to read them on the air. Please send them our way so we can do so. We love fan interaction, listener interaction, so we can go ahead and do that and get your voices heard. If you have questions, if you have comments about previous episodes, send them our way. We'll read them, and we'll give you our thoughts and answer your questions to the best of our ability. Please go and rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or the Google Play Store. More ratings and reviews will get us more viewers because we become more visible in the charts. So please get out there and write some reviews for us. If you love the show and you think it's worth sending some money to, check out patreon.com/synthaholics if you want to support the show. If you're interested in Guy Davis's art, his USS Tamerlan comic, and his upcoming Witches of Flame, you can check out patreon.com/gsdavisart. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Thanks, awesome. Jeff.
No, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. I always love doing this stuff. So this was a lot of fun for me. I love meeting other Trek podcasters. This is it's a highlight for me.
Oh yeah, me too. I mean, it just like I'm so glad. I mean, like it's the most amazing series of dominoes. Like Larry Nemechek liked my Synthaholics page, and so I was like, I know Larry Nemechek. I mean, I know of him. You know, I never met him
He's
before.
Awesome,
but
man.
since he liked my page, I was like, hey. Since instead of just me sending him a cold thing, hey, can you come on my show? He hit the like button, so he knows I exist. Yep. So I was like, hey, you want to come on my show? And then I had him on when we did it a year from the year after Leonard Nimoy passed away. I had him on to come say a few words about, you know, Leonard Nimoy. And he's like, well, if you really want to talk about Leonard Nimoy, you should get in hold of Bonnie Moss. And I'm like, oh, so he tweeted at me and Bonnie Moss. So that's how I met Bonnie Moss.
Nice.
And then I had her on my show like a week later, and she gave us like a whole rundown about Leonard Nimoy and her stuff she's done with him and like, you know, stuff inspired by him. And then she's kind of how I met you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this awesome, awesome domino. It's
amazing, isn't it?
It is.
It's amazing. And Larry is phenomenal, man. He is such a cool dude. And I've met him in person several times, and he's in person, he's just like he is on the podcast. He's such a great, great guy and so charismatic. And he's trying to find the right words.
I can't wait to meet him. He's in person. I've never met him in person. I've had him like four times. I can't wait to shake his hand.
You will love him. I mean, he's such a wonderful guy. He's so caring and engaging and loving of Star Trek fans, and